All right, back for the second half, you guys. Good conversation so far. Keep it going.
Yeah, let's keep it going. Taylor.
Yeah.
Taylor's here. This is great. We're chatting a little bit more about testing and labs and fun things like that. We left off talking about beverages and, kind of going a little, we were talking about potency a lot, right? And so we're going to go away from potency and we're going to talk about all the other stuff that we were testing for, right? So potency is important from a consumer standpoint and understanding you're getting what it is. But how's the consumer supposed to figure that out?
Oh, isn't that the million-dollar question?
Yeah.
So it's the potency content, the potency profile of all of these products obviously is the dominant factor in the conversation space. What's your THC content? What's your CBD content? But there are a variety of other analytical tests that must be performed on these products, more so within the realm of ensuring consumer safety, a heavy metals profile, pesticides, microbial contaminants. You know, these are all the aspects of laboratory testing that are absolutely critical to make sure that all of these products are safe to consume, but all too often don't get as much, we'll say, airtime or space in the conversations, because it seems to me the vast majority of all consumers, you know, they just want to know the THC content. What's the potency profile? But people also need to start asking questions. Is this safe for me to consume? Are there heavy metal contaminants in this? Do you have any mold that's growing on this?
Mm-hmm.
And those are all of the other testing services that we do at Legend as well. It's right. Not just your potency content. It is all the other contaminant tests or safety tests, as we call them, to make sure that everything that is going on the market is actually safe for a consumer to have. One of the issues, at least historically, with the product industry, there has not been a regulatory body that checks to make sure that these products have been tested before they go on the market. You know, there's not some team of auditors that are going and checking, okay, yep, you've had your seltzer tested for everything, you're allowed to sell it. Or, yep, you've had your gummy tested for everything, you're allowed to sell it. It's definitely more of an on your honor type of industry, at least it has been historically.
Okay.
The term that has often been used is it's the Wild West of the THC industry. And a question that I've been frequently asked is, okay, well, what should consumers know?
Right.
What should consumers be looking out for? And what I tell everyone is, with whatever product that you're considering purchasing, make sure it was tested at a lab. Make sure that the lab report that's associated with the QR code or available on the company's website is for the product that is in front of you. And also make sure that it's had all of the safety tests that are required: pesticides, aflatoxins, heavy metals, residual solvents, and microbial contaminants. I know it can seem daunting for consumers to try and, we'll say, memorize that list or know exactly what they're looking for. But it is a conversation that needs to be had that I want to make sure people are aware of.
Yeah.
Is, you know, with every product that's out there, unfortunately, there is a degree of individual and personal responsibility in knowing, is what I'm about to purchase, is this safe for me? Has this been tested? Because all too often, people who are manufacturing these are not being held under scrutiny to the degree that I think they should be, that mm-hmm. those processes are being followed.
Right.
Fortunately, that is changing now with recreational cannabis. There are in-statute provisions requiring lab testing for everything, and there are hopefully going to be procedures implemented by the Office of Cannabis Management for forcing the checks of these products to be done, of their lab testing reports to be done before going to market. So it is moving in the right direction, but that infrastructure is not yet built in Minnesota.
Right.
Can I ask a question here? And this is kind of where our two worlds collide, both the testing and the law. So, and this is I'm going to give you kind of the scenario and then the question. And if you can't answer it, I can appreciate if you say, Calandra, I can't answer that question. Or, you know, I'm not at liberty to, or just don't want to, or I just don't know. So I was at a conference. You know, I'm the conference queen.
Yeah, conference queen.
And this conference was for lawyers in cannabis. So now that the state allows cannabis drinks on tap, there was this huge conversation amongst the lawyers in the room about, number one, how do we know that each pour that comes out of that tap is going to be 5 milligrams or 10 milligrams? Of course, none of the lawyers had your job, but that was one question. The other question was that was brought up by a lawyer who also owns a brewery. He talked about how exactly what you said, how that THC, you know, kind of trickles down to the bottom. So how do we know when you pour that you're getting THC at all? Because it may be at the bottom. The third question was contamination, you know, having a dedicated line for that tap versus, you know, being contaminated by other lines that may have mold and, you know, other things in the line. So, and I know that's a long question, but do you know if there's a way, I'm not asking, you know, if you can do it, but is there a way, if you have THC beverages on tap, do you see a path to making sure each pour that goes into that glass is 5 or 10 milligrams?
Oh, isn't that a big question?
That's a hell of a big question.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I like it. Let's see how it goes.
There is a concept in the lab testing space known as product uniformity or content uniformity, which touches on exactly that. If you have, you know, a large batch of a product that you're making, Lance, I'm going to borrow your seltzer again, I may. If I were to take a portion of this seltzer in this can right off the top, and then another portion straight from the bottom, and test them, will the results from those two portions be, you know, in tandem with one another, or will they differ? Mm-hmm. Even outside of, we'll say, a singular can, to use, you know, the situation that you've described, if you have a vat of, well, I don't know how much these, you know, breweries can hold, but for the sake of an example, let's say, you know, 100 gallons of a beverage, you know, how do you know that the very first pour has the same THC content as the very last pour? I wish I had a good answer to that question. The concept of product uniformity is much easier to address, deal with, and kind of, you know, make sure is consistent with certain product types and not so much with others. Gummies, for example. Gummies are very, very consistent from one piece to the next within a batch. You know, there will be a mass gelatin mold that is, you know, tumbled and mixed thoroughly, and then, you know, poured into the, you know, to the individual molds for the gummy pieces. And the amount of THC throughout is, you know, very, very consistent. But when it comes to products that are, you have the possibility of non-uniform suspension, such as beverages, where everything can kind of slowly settle to the bottom or crash out, then it becomes a much more difficult concept or a difficult problem to address. I have seen some vendors that when they do sell a THC seltzer, before giving it to someone, they'll actually lay it horizontal and roll it against the countertop just to try and, you know, homogenize everything that's in the can throughout the entirety of the can before serving it. And I must admit, I am not sure what techniques could be incorporated or implemented by a brewery that has, again, say this 100-gallon, vat of THC beverage that they are pouring to make sure that it is, uniform and consistent from the first pour to the last. Mm-hmm. I would imagine, as far as a generality, there would have to be some way to consistently and constantly homogenize the entire vat, whether it be something to the equivalent of, we'll say, the seltzer example, pour it on its side and gently roll it, or if there's, once a day the vat is somehow stirred or agitated, mm-hmm. Are some of the first things that come to mind. But with larger batches of THC-infused products, that most certainly is a concern that we are still in the thralls of kind of dealing with. And I'm not entirely sure what answers are yet out there, but I know it's one of the things that, well, like we said in the first half of the podcast, it's one of the exciting things about the industry, because we'll see in a few months or a few years, what technology or what process does someone come out with to mitigate that issue of product uniformity that we may not even know about today.
Because I believe Minnesota's the only state that has THC beverages on tap that allows it.
I think.
But we're still like figuring it out, because at the conference we were discussing, none of the lawyers had heard of a way to ensure that the consumer is getting that 5 to 10 milligrams each pour.
Yeah, let me add to
quite
this.
Interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The idea of a keg, right? So a half barrel keg gets you 100. I don't know. I'm probably wrong about this, but like 125 pints. Mm-hmm. Off of it. And that's usually just in the scenario of beer, because beer is just carbonated and foams differently, and you're not seeing that with the THC beverage. So if we're pouring, we're going to be pouring off of a sixth barrel, a quarter barrel, or half barrel. So we'll take the largest of those versus like the large vat, 100 gallon. I totally understand where we were there, but let's break it down to just the half barrel that's sitting in the restaurant or the brewery, and we're pulling off of that. And the concern is, how do you know that the first pint, which, let's just call it a pint for ease, the first pint and the last pint are going to be as close as they possibly could be to...
That they're consistent with each other.
Exactly, right? So how do we figure out what those are going to end up being? But we also have to understand, how does what's in that half barrel keg get out of that keg? And so that's right. Consistently being pushed. And it's consistently being pushed and coming out the top. Mm-hmm. So you don't have your keg in upside down. You have your keg sitting upright, right? Mm-hmm. And then your collars and everything like that reside on the top. And there is CO2 that is being pushed into that liquid that then pushes that liquid up to the top. Because there's not like a straw down inside of a keg. Mm-hmm. So it's being pushed by gas, yeah. Right? Yeah. So the likelihood... I'm not a scientist, but the likelihood mm-hmm. that what is at the top of mm-hmm. that keg, which is going to be the first of what ends up getting poured, and what's at the bottom of that keg, without having to agitate it, without having to roll the keg, you have to do that with some very heavily hopped and heavily fruited kegs, right? You got to mm-hmm. roll them around in order mm-hmm. to just agitate. I don't believe you'd have to do that in this case, and I think that the likelihood, if we're talking about a can and we're still on potency, and we're going to get to the other stuff too, but in the can, the first ounce and the last ounce being different shouldn't happen, but it depends on the distillate, the water soluble, it depends on your inputs. That's what really ends up mattering on it falling out of suspension or crashing out. But I don't believe in a half barrel scenario, mm-hmm. there's not enough places for it to land because it's being pushed from the bottom by gas.
Well, I'll just tell you, we've had some requests from owners of restaurants for my beverage to be mm-hmm. on tap, and I've gone out to my co-packers and they're like, it's going to kind of trickle to the bottom. We've already been researching this because we've had requests for other beverage owners, and they've just kind of they declined from even like engaging in space because of kind of what you just described with the can. It's happening with the keg. So
they tested it.
Yeah. So I just want to know from, you know, the professor here. if it was possible to get around it.
The professor. I like it.
Yeah. So it doesn't sound like there is. So I was just curious, you know, from my own perspective, because, you know, with the can versus a keg, it's kind of a similar issue. But I know you can't, like, roll around the keg, like, with one hand, you know, kind of like how you could do with Lance's
right
can, like,
right. You just.
Yeah.
Right.
Most certainly. And at least, you know, I cannot definitively say there's not an answer to your question. You know, I only, you know, oversee and have been familiar with just one aspect of the hemp and cannabis industry, you know, the laboratory testing of it. But even just in the last 10 minutes, listening to Lance talk about, we'll say, the actual, you know, logistics of how a keg worked, and that there are some that are, you know, agitated, like you said, if they are particularly hoppy or fruity, you know, that just that information was, as of 10 minutes ago, outside of my scope.
Okay.
And it also kind of highlights, you know, what we mentioned earlier, that there are so many different facets and aspects of the THC industry, of the hemp and cannabis industry, that if there is a question like the one that you had, I on the lab testing side may not have an answer, but perhaps jointly with a keg expert Lance,
sure,
that we may then be able to find a more, you know, concrete and definitive answer. You know, one person may not have the answer, but the industry as a whole will find one.
Okay. All right.
Now I want to test it.
You should.
I will.
You should.
I'm gonna.
I would love to see the result.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll give you my card after.
Yeah. We'll figure it all out. So, okay. So the testing for the other stuff, right? Like, we've figured out potency, and this is how we test for potency, right? And run us through kind of a similar thing, like, what does it look like for flower? What does it look like for a gummy? What does it look like for a beverage? You know, keeping mind of time and, you know, tolerance for microbials. But tell us more.
Oh, goodness. So now shifting on to the other, you know, high-profile analyses.
Right.
So there are a variety of different instruments that are utilized for performing the different analyses. So, for example, your heavy metals profile, you know, arsenic, lead, cadmium, all the things you really don't want in you.
Right.
Those are analyzed by an ICP-MS. It's an inductively coupled plasma mass spectrometer. It's a big old fancy long word for, yeah, I can tell you how much lead is in there down to parts per billion, if not parts per trillion levels.
Wow.
For the pesticide residues, we use an LC-MS. So that is a mass spectrometer that also is based on liquid chromatography. Just a whole host of very interesting, you know, technologies for performing each and every one of, you know, the different analyses. You know,
right.
If we had 4 hours, you know, perhaps I could answer all.
Really get into all of it?
Yes. If you, you know, to answer all the questions on, okay, now how do you prepare flower versus gummies versus seltzers for every single different analysis?
Yeah.
So we would need much more time than we have.
Right. So let's talk about the distillate, right? Like where it started. So if we talk about where it started and it brings us to where we are, right? Like this not crashing out has a lot to do with the inputs, right? And I like to call it the juice. I just like to call it the THC juice, but where it came from was the distillate. And then it went from there to there to there and into here. So now what, right? Like there's a bunch of distillate that's out there that could have been the challenge before on stuff falling out, could not be, could be the challenge in the potency, could be the challenge in the, why is this a 7.2 milligram when I did all my math right and it's supposed to be 10.12.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a conversation that I've had with probably about 100 different clients that I know I'm going to have 100 times again.
Right.
Which is a client will manufacture a particular product. Let's just say gummies. They're aiming for, you know, 5 milligrams of THC per piece. And they have done their diligence to make sure that, yep, I've done all my math correctly. I've made sure that my formulation is accurate. I should be hitting, you know, darn near exactly 5 milligrams per piece. And they'll send it to me, and, you know, my team will test it. And, oh, this is actually 3.5 milligrams per piece. You're low by about 30%. And, you know, the client will say, well, that doesn't quite seem right. You know, I've done my math. You know, everything seems correct. And then I'll ask, okay, well, was your juice tested?
Sure.
To borrow a phrase from Lance. And so these, you know, THC distillates and concentrates that people purchase, I have seen that what the manufacturer of these distillates will claim as the THC content is not actually the THC content. And so I'll ask the client, if you still have, you know, some of that original THC juice,
mm-hmm.
send it to me. You know, we'll test it for you with our methods and our techniques. And then lo and behold, oh, they advertised it at 90%, 91% mm-hmm. THC. No, it's only about 70%, maybe 71%. And then if that particular client then reformulates, redoes their math based on our lab tested results,
mm-hmm.
they're spot on, 5 milligrams. I believe that the reason this happens, there's a particular clause in one of the statutes. And we have to discuss this with the lawyer from Minnesota Statute 151.72 for hemp-derived products. There's a clause in there that says that the lab-tested results of any intermediates or precursors cannot apply to the final batch release of your product. Meaning if you are making gummies and you have your gelatin tested for microbial contaminants, and then you use that gelatin in your process to make your gummies. Oh, no, it's your finished product that has to be tested. Mm-hmm. And so I can only imagine trying to pick the brains of these THC concentrate manufacturers. Oh, well, if any lab report that we may have, any test report that we may have on our concentrate cannot be utilized for the final batch release, well, legally, why would we have it tested at a third-party lab? You know, we've done our math. We can verify based on our numbers that it's 90%. And to be fair, there are a lot of manufacturers that are quite good at making sure that their potency profile is exactly what they advertise. I do not want to cast a bad light on the THC juice manufacturers. There are some quite good ones. However, very, very frequently, if a client of mine who has a manufactured product has the THC content that is not where they want, all too often it's because the distillate that they used did not have the potency profile that was advertised.
Hmm. Buy good distillate out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hit us up. Okay. We know some people.
Yeah. We've had one on the show, Todd Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, that's great. What else is important about the testing, right? The regulations, whatever that ends up being. We've got time for one more quick little conversation.
Yeah, you know, and we kind of talked about this a little bit before we started. We talked about like conferences and, you know, keeping up with current trends and upcoming trends. Like, what are some things you enjoy about conferences, and what do you look for? We kind of talked about that before we got on the air.
Mm. So as far as conferences, you know, mm-hmm. I've attended a few trade shows, you know, CannaCon most recently and mm-hmm. the Lucky Leaf Convention. And the thing that I found most interesting is seeing all of the different facets and sectors that exist within the hemp and cannabis industry that doesn't quite seem to be, you know, broadcasted or overtly known. you know, of course, everybody knows you've got your cultivation, actually growing your plant material. You've got manufacturing. I'm going to, you know, turn it into a, you know, a usable product, you know, a gummy or a vape. And you've got your dispensaries. But seeing all of the other different industries, you know, financing options, investments, insurance, security, transportation, labeling, you know, there are just so many. And so I always enjoyed going to the conferences and not just, you know, standing at our booth for Legend Technical Services, but walking up and down the aisles to see all of the other different vendors, you know, who is getting into what portion of the cannabis industry, what service are they providing. Mm-hmm. That is actually why, if I can, you know, take a bit of a tangent here, for all the listeners out there and for the two of you, you know, there was something that I mentioned when I was asked the question about the homogeneity and the uniformity of the on tap beverage. And then, you know, I myself, just on the lab testing side, didn't quite have an answer. But of course, Lance, with his keg wisdom, you know, the functionality of kegs. Oh, well, the combination of kind of our two, you know, backgrounds, the information that we have. Oh, maybe a little bit closer to an answer there. Mm-hmm. There was a phrase that I used, you know, one person might not have the answer, but the industry will have one. There's an organization that I'm a part of, that I'm actually a board member with, called the Minnesota Marijuana Association, or MMA. And it is the most well-networked and broad, you know, cannabis nonprofits in the state of Minnesota. There are board members from every different sector that are considered industry experts that know everything that needs to be known about their portion on law enforcement, the legal side, on manufacturing, cultivation, sale, distribution, and lab testing. And I'm a board member with this group. And one of the reasons that I joined the group is actually exactly what was brought up earlier, where it's, let's see what all of the different sects and aspects are. But not only that, but to take it a step further, who are the individuals within each sect that will have the answers to these questions? That if I don't have an answer on, we'll say, liability or insurance, our legal expert on the board of the MMA will, that I might not have the answer for what are the transportation requirements and security requirements. I might not have the answer, but someone on the board will. But also on the flip side, if the, you know, board member who's a cultivation expert is asked a question, oh, well, I know Minnesota only requires, you know, a few heavy metals to be tested, but we have concerns about additional ones, maybe copper, chromium, and magnesium. Can that be tested? Well, that board member might not have the answer, but let me get you in touch with Taylor over at Legend. He's also a board member, and he'll know. And that's one of the things that I enjoy most about the industry, my position at Legend, and also with being a board member with the MMA, is that I can serve as, hopefully, the individual who sometimes has the right answers.
Well, I can tell you are going to get more questions about that tap.
Yeah, for sure. There's no doubt about that. Well, on that, we'll wrap up. We appreciate you coming in, Taylor.
Yes, I'm glad I was this invited. Was extremely informative. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's a great time.
Yes.
Well, appreciate of course. It. I'm always happy to share the information that I have, because there's a long history of hemp and cannabis testing in Minnesota. Would need much more than just 1 hour to cover it all.
There we go. Yes. Mm-hmm. Cheers.
Right. Cheers. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Of course.